Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How have Native Americans shaped the history of the United States? We now have many accounts of European Americans who sought to control the land and resources that allowed Native Americans to thrive for centuries before the first white settlers arrived. But many stories of the abusive and often ignorant practices of Europeans have failed to characterize the complex realities that existed within the Native nations affected by immigration, portraying Native responses to white incursions, but leaving out the stories of tribes that actively worked to protect their own people, their own land, and their own rights. An ambitious effort by the television series American Experience is seeking to change that. Sharon Grinberg is executive producer of the miniseries We Shall Remain, which debuts April 13th on PBS stations, including KERA 13. Filmmaker Chris Ayer, who won wide acclaim for his 1998 feature film Smoke Signals, directed three of the programs, including Trail of Tears, which airs April 27th. Both of them are in town for a screening of Trail of Tears tonight on the campus of the University of Texas at Dallas. You can find details on the Think page of KERA.org. Chris and Sharon, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Sharon, I want to start with you. Would you talk about the genesis of the series? Because I know that you arrived at this idea after starting research on a very different kind of project.
Yeah, a few years back at American Experience, we considered doing a very large series about the history of America. And we did a lot of research. I was very intimately involved in that. And for a number of reasons, we never launched that project. But in doing the research, particularly in the early period, we came across a number of important stories about Native people. And me and my colleague, Mark Samuels, who's the executive producer of American Experience, thought that we should look into this more. And the more we thought about it, the more we talked to people, we realized that was a very important story that never been told about Native Americans and the evolution of the United States of America. And that Native history has too often been put on one side of American history, not integrated into the way we think about our country, and that we could do something that would be very important, that would bring Native stories into the fabric of the American experience.
Chris, you have Native American heritage. You had addressed this in different ways in your career before, but you'd sort of stayed away from history in filmmaking before this. Can you talk about why?
This is Chris, and I had never done a period piece, and the reason was because I always felt that they were slanted towards things that we'd heard before, or history books that seemed to be the same, in that the Indians always die at the end, and it's very difficult history, and it's hard to watch. So I'd never done a period piece, and when I started talking to Sharon Grinberg and Mark Samuels at WGBH in Boston, I started to realize that they wanted to try and do something different, which is a huge task in and of itself, to say, hey, we're going to try to shift the perspective and make this a series that is seen through Native American eyes. And so I was happy to come on and be part of that. And I think we've done it. I mean, I think we've done that quite well. I mean, tonight's screening of The Trail of Tears at the University of
Texas at Dallas
at 7:30 tonight, I think is a great indication of how we've slanted the history in a way that hasn't been seen before, and that way is through Native eyes.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, can you talk about how in the world you start to get together a team for a project this big with uh-huh. so many different stories to tell?
I've sort of been thinking about what to say at the screening tonight, because one of the remarkable things about this series is the collaboration on it. Hundreds of people made these films, and some of them had never been on film sets before. We knew from the beginning that that in order to tell this history, it's a very difficult history. It overturns some cherished notions that many Americans have about our history. And it's painful. It's painful, some of it, to Native people. And it hasn't been told well or properly before. And there's a certain amount of deserved mistrust. And so in the very beginning, We came up with unusual ways to tell the story. We had sort of a number of partnerships. Chris, who's done a lot of feature work before, never done documentary before, and we brought him into the project to direct the feature-like elements of what's really a documentary series. But he was working with documentary filmmakers. We work really closely with the communities to make these films. So on set in Georgia, for example, when we were shooting The Trail of Tears, we had a language consultant to teach not just the Cherokees, but some of the non-Cherokee actors how to speak Cherokee. We were very fortunate in The Trail of Tears that Wes Studi, who plays one of the leads, he plays Major Ridge. It's the first time he's Cherokee. He's been in hundreds of films. This is the first time he's ever used Cherokee in a meaningful way in a film. First time he's ever played a Cherokee lead. So we worked very hard to bring in all sorts of collaborations on this project, both within the sort of advisory role. One of the first things we did before Chris even came on to the project was to convene a little meeting of scholars and people in the Native production community to talk about what story should we tell, where should the series begin, where should it end. What were the important themes? And we brought in, a number of scholars. Dave Edmonds at the University of Texas at Dallas has been involved in this project from almost the very beginning and helping us think it through. On the fourth show, for example, we had it's about Geronimo, and we paired a White Mountain Apache filmmaker, he's White Mountain Apache in Navajo, with a white filmmaker. She had a very extensive experience in historical documentaries, and he didn't. But he had a cultural understanding of the community that she did, and they had never met before. It was an arranged marriage. It was, in a way, we were hoping that they would work together nicely, and in fact, they had an incredible collaboration, I think, and have become very, very close friends.
Having worked with actors on this production, and of course you've worked with them on feature productions, Chris, I wonder if you can address whether or not there's some tension within the Native American community about someone. You mentioned that Wes Studi is in fact a Cherokee, but I wonder, is it sort of bothersome when an actor who is not a Cherokee is portraying a Cherokee in a film?
I think it can be bothersome to some people. In the movies that I've done over the years, I think it's progress that you use a Native American to play a Native American, even if you're crossing, different tribes, based on, us coming from great actors like Richard Harris or, in A Man Called Horse or anybody else along the history of cinema that's played an Indian that's not an Indian. I think that, we've come a long way in that, Indians are actually portraying themselves in some manner in movies. But with this, we really were conscious of making it more accurate. We brought in a group of elders from Oklahoma that were Cherokee elders that were actually speaking Cherokee as their first language. And Wes, like Sharon said, got to speak Cherokee. So we really, stuck to, at least in show three, and also in show two and one, we stuck to using, for instance, in show one, Wampanoags in some of the lead roles for that show. And, for me, that's kind of, what my, as an artist, what I'd like to see. And I think everybody else felt the same way. So,
how challenging was it to recreate places that in some cases haven't existed for hundreds of years?
I think that we did a great job. I mean, one of the things that I really admire in this series and tonight's episode of The Trail of Tears is that I think we're showing a perspective that hasn't been seen before. With the Cherokees were incredibly assimilated in this country in the 1820s and 30s, where they owned plantations and they had huge houses. They learned the English language. They invented their own alphabet and way to interpret their native tongue with their own newspapers. Many people don't know it, but there were some Cherokees that were actually slave owners in the South. And they were incredibly progressive, if that's the right word to use, in that they assimilated into the American way of life. And what we see then is that even though they've done everything they're supposed to do, they still are pushed out of Georgia and put on the trail, and some 4,000 of them die walking to Oklahoma because they can never truly be accepted.
And in fact, before they were pushed out, one of the first clip that we have takes place right after there's a wedding that took place. I believe it was John Ross, and he married a white woman. And
it's John Ridge.
John Ridge, excuse me. And was sort of found his way into acceptance with her family, but then was really sort of pushed out of town by the community.
He was. The clip that's coming up is one in which he and his young wife, who's not Native American, are married, and the townspeople push them out of Connecticut.
The reaction of New England whites, enlightened progressive New England whites, makes a mark on him. He had been told, get an education, take up Western ways, you can be part of us. He will never believe whites in exactly the same way again.
That was a clip from the third part of the PBS American Experience miniseries, We Shall Remain. It's called Trail of Tears. That show will air on April 27th, but in fact there is a screening tonight at the University of Texas at Dallas. We are here with Sharon Grimberg, the executive producer of the series, and Chris Ayer, who directed three of the different pieces. I wonder, you talked about the fact that there were slaveholders among the Cherokee. Were there people within the Cherokee community that said, let's not make a big deal about this, let's leave this sort of portion of our history behind? Or were all the Native people that you worked with and consulted with really invested in making sure that the good, the bad, and the ugly was all out there?
This is an incredibly important moment for Cherokee people, and it's stayed with Cherokee people for, you know, coming up for 200 years. It's a moment they'll never forget, and it's a moment that tore the Cherokee Nation apart in terrible ways because they couldn't agree among themselves about how to deal with this removal threat, and they and you know, some terrible things, if you see the film, happen to the nation internally because of this rift. So I think it was incredibly important to the Cherokees that we do this right. And you know, once again, I was saying that there was a huge amount of trust that was put in us to do this. And I think when people turned up in Georgia, maybe some of them still had some doubts about whether we could pull it off. It's a history that's fraught with tension and is still lived. I mean, Chris was talking about the extras who came from Oklahoma. We also had a big casting call. The Cherokee, there are three federally recognized Cherokee groups, and one of them is the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. There's also the Eastern Band of Cherokee who live in North Carolina, and many of the extras came from North Carolina. We cast the extras from there, and we had a little cafe, and our casting director went there, and I think about 100 people showed up to be in this film, and so they drove down from North Carolina to Georgia to take part. And for them, it was I think an incredibly emotional thing being involved in this production. And I think it was incredibly important to them that Chris was directing this, that here was this film that was telling people about this very painful part of their past, and a Native American director was seeing them through it.
Sharon Grimberg and Chris Ayer are here. We're talking about the PBS American Experience miniseries, We Shall Remain. We'll return in a moment, and you can call us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can get ahead in today's tough economy with hundreds of courses beginning this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about the upcoming PBS American Experience miniseries, We Shall Remain. It debuts, it's five parts, it debuts April 13th. There is a screening of Part 3, Trail of Tears, tonight on the UTD campus at 7:30. You can find information about that screening on the Think page of KERA.org. Sharon Grimberg is with us. She is the executive producer for the entire miniseries. Director Chris Ayer is here as well. He worked on three of the parts. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. One of the things I found fascinating about the Trail of Tears episode was how much the Cherokees worked to stay within the sort of American legal system. They tried to work through the courts. They tried to do things the way they were told would bring them the results that they wanted.
It's an incredible story. The Cherokees worked within the legal system of this country. They won a Supreme Court decision in which they were vindicated for the right to be in the territory of Georgia and be sovereign, and that their boundaries as the Cherokee Nation were upheld. And the President of the United States, Jackson, told the Supreme Court he defied the Supreme Court and said, "Let them, let the judge enforce it." And he's the only president to, you know, openly defy a Supreme Court order. And that was Andrew Jackson. So, I mean, they did everything by the book, by the numbers, and they were placed in this incredible situation in which Major Ridge and his group and John Ross and his group came to a loggerhead, you know, where Major Ridge decided with a group of people that he was going to start the move to Oklahoma, and the John Ross faction stayed in the east, in the Georgia territory. And I think to myself as a native person, you know, what I might have done. You know, if you stayed in the east, you could assume there was going to be military action against you and your family. And if you moved, you gave up your homeland. And maybe it was less bloodshed if you moved, but, you know, you don't know. You don't know what you might have done. So, I mean, this is where I think this story and all of them are incredibly interesting and important because of the complexity of the stories and just, you know, what you might have done yourself.
And it came to a point where ultimately they went back one final time and tried to bring to Congress a petition.
That's right. That's right. I think they had almost every Cherokee available to them sign a petition that ended up being, I think, 150 feet long, and it had 15,000 signatures on it that was basically ignored when it got to Washington, D.C.
The Cherokee chief knew he was working against time. Deadline for removal was May 1838, and 7,000 federal troops had ringed Cherokee territory. White settlers began to close the circle, like vultures, said one federal officer, ready to strip the Cherokees of everything they have. Still, John Ross had faith in the common decency of white Americans. He thought the Ridge's narrowly ratified treaty could be overturned, and he took one last shot, authoring a bold statement from the Cherokee Nation in the form of a written petition to be laid before the United States Senate. "We acknowledge our own feebleness," the Cherokees said. "Our only fortress is the justice of our cause. Our only appeal on earth is to your tribunal." The petition arrived at Ross's hotel in Washington just weeks before the removal deadline. It had been signed by 15,665 people, virtually every Cherokee in the East.
There were some sheets that were blue, some were white, some were almost orange, some were long, some were wide. And they sewed those all together in a scroll. And if you laid those out, they'd be over 160 feet long. And John Ross had prepared for one of the Cherokee's friends in the Senate to place that upon the table in the Senate. that protest, so they would reconsider the execution of that treaty. And before that senator could present it, a congressman from Kentucky and one from Maine had a duel, and one killed the other. And Congress adjourned.
That was a clip from part three of the PBS American miniseries We Shall Remain called Trail of Tears. There's a screening of Trail of Tears tonight on the UTD Dallas campus. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. The irony of that is extraordinary because it really, the fact that that was sort of taken off the table had little to do with politics specifically as related to the Cherokees. Something weird happened and they never got back to it.
Yeah, that's right. They never got back to it. I think it's a really, I find it an incredibly moving part of that story that so many of those Cherokee men, women, and children signed that petition. Pretty much every member of the Cherokee Nation who still remained in the East signed it, and it never saw the light of day, effectively. I think it's a terrible piece of that story. But the other thing I wanted to say is that each of, you know, I think that this story is an important part of the fabric of We Shall Remain, because each of the stories really is about how Native people resisted in different ways. And we wanted to show the gamut of those strategies of resistance, because I think too often when we think of Native people in this country, we think of military resistance. We think of Custer and his and Sitting Bull and the Plains. And Native people are very, there's a great range of people who lived on this continent, and they resisted in many different ways. And I think that this kind of legal and judicial and political resistance of the Cherokee is an important piece of that story, as is the spiritual resistance that you'll see in Tecumseh, which is the second show. And the first show is really about diplomacy. It's about the Wampanoags in New England and the Pilgrims, and sort of a diplomatic gamble that the Wampanoag leader, Massasoit, made to maintain the position of his people in New England. And I think that's a very important part of this story.
Do you have a sense, Chris, that Americans as a whole are starting to relate to the history of Native Americans as part of their American ancestors, as opposed to people who are very different from them if they happen to be non-Native American?
I feel like there's a large wave of people in this country that understand they have Native American blood in them and identify with this history in a very passionate, empathetic way. I see that all the time. I mean, as far as Cherokee goes, I think there are probably more Americans with Cherokee blood than any other Native group in this country, probably. So that's something that I think is valuable, because I do see a lot of us as Americans visiting our past in an effort to, you know, understand it and not repeat the same mistakes. I was in Agua Caliente in Palm Springs, which is a tribe, and just did a screening of the Trail of Tears, and I was totally over the moon and pleased that Dennis Banks, who is the founder of the American Indian Movement, was there, and he got up and said that, you know, we deserved, you know, awards for the telling of this history. And, you know, for me as a younger person and a filmmaker, and somebody like Dennis Banks getting up and, you know, making this comment after he saw the Trail of Tears, you know, it was just a total total surprise and honor that Dennis, who's also in the fifth show, the Wounded Knee show, and is played, you know, very predominantly in that show, was also, you know, a fan of the show that we played just a few nights ago there in California.
Let's talk about Wounded Knee as the final part of this series. Mm-hmm. People might have assumed that you would end this in the 19th century, but it was a very deliberate decision to bring this into modern history.
We struggled with where to end the film, and we realized pretty early on that we needed to take it into the 20th century, because there's a way in which many Americans sort of see the end of Native history in a way at the end of the 19th century with the end of the Indian Wars. And what we really want to do with this series is to say no, Native Americans are still very much a part of our country, and they are Cherokee and Apache and Navajo, and they're also American citizens, and this is their country too. And they survived a terrible history with imagination and ingenuity, and they lived on into the 20th century, into the 21st century. And in many ways, they are, as a result of Wounded Knee and that stand in the 70s, sort of looking in a different way into their future. A lot of things have happened since that event that changed the way that Native Americans identify themselves. There's been a huge pushback against assimilation, a real embrace of Native languages and cultures, and a huge effort to save them, and really a rethinking of the relationship between the federal government and tribes, and a real effort to protect Native sovereignty. And that's been a huge, huge effort since that siege at Wounded Knee in 73.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're talking about the upcoming PBS American Experience miniseries, We Shall Remain, with Chris Ayer, director of Three of the Parts, and executive producer Sharon Grimberg. Let's go to Ken in Wise County. Hello, Ken.
Hello. I just want to thank you guys so much for this. I was born in 44 in North Carolina, and my paternal grandmother was full-blood Eastern Tribe Cherokee. And one only needs to look at her pictures to see it. But growing up in the 50s, the movies, the cowboy stuff, the Indians were all the bad guys. And so I never connected, but it hit me one day, many years later, when my grandmother one day told me, I was walking a bit splay-footed. And she told me, she said, a brave doesn't walk like that. He puts his toes straight in front of him, and he puts his heel down first, because it's quieter. And now I'm trying to get my CDIB, my Certificate of Degree of Indian Blood. I've read Trail of Tears. I bought it when it first came out. I've read Century of Dishonor and Bury My Heart. And there's a lot of pain there. But this thing you've done, I would love to come to Dallas to see that screening, but I've got too much to do.
Well, it'll be on. Thanks so much for your call, Ken. It will be on television on Channel 13 here in Dallas beginning April 13th. So you'll be able to watch all five parts, even if you can't make the screening tonight. I wonder if you can both talk about working together with filmmakers who have Native ancestry and those who don't, and whether there was a sort of dancing around things that people weren't sure of, or whether there was a time in which everyone was a little bit afraid of saying the wrong thing or saying the right thing and being misinterpreted.
I would put that to Chris a little bit, because Chris, you and you were sort of put in the situation of working with documentary filmmakers and also very closely with Rick Burns on the Tecumseh film. Tecumseh is the second film in the series, and in a way, Tecumseh was a film that kind of set the template for the other films, the other dramatic films. They shot theirs first and kind of set a template for what would come after that. And I think that there were a lot of things that all of us had to learn. From my perspective, I feel like I come squarely from the documentary tradition, and suddenly we were like working with these feature people. I mean, that was a huge cultural shock.
So that's the cultural
shock. It was a huge cultural shock, I think, in some ways. And then in addition to that, you know, they had their whole different crazy way of doing things. And we used to going out with one cameraman and one sound recordist, and the director, producer, writer carries the camera bag. I mean, it's a
there's
very...
no craft services
yes,
in
there's
your
no
world.
Craft, you know, it's a much smaller kind of setup. And so there was honestly a kind of a huge culture and language difference there. And then there was, this much heavier and weightier thing, which was a shared history, but a shared history that we didn't all have the same access to. We hadn't all had the same... hadn't all heard the same stories. And... I felt that was a huge, from my perspective on being location, there was a huge amount of respect from all sides, and a huge feeling that we were doing something important together. And I do think it made an incredible difference to those Native extras and actors that Chris was there. I think that it made, in my opinion, it made a world of difference to them to have a Native American directing them. For Wes Studi as well, I mean, someone who's been in many, many movies, to have another Native American as a key creative force on the project. I wasn't... From my perspective, and I would be actually interested to hear what Chris has to say, from my perspective, it was a very productive conversation for the most part.
It was an incredible experiment that happened to go right in the end. We all came together, and I think we had apprehensions about how things would work and, you know, documentary and narrative styles together. And I was in an arranged marriage with a great filmmaker, Rick Burns, who's a wonderful documentary maker. And Rick and I, you know, were a little apprehensive coming in. And then next thing you know, we just took off down the road as two partners in this endeavor. And we had to learn, you know, different things. And then having the Cherokee elders come out and actually play characters in the movie, and none of them had ever been in a movie, there was just a spirit of trust where people were trusting everything that they'd heard, which is we're doing this for these reasons and we really want to examine the history and show it from a Native perspective. And that trust, you know, forges itself into people allowing everything to happen and walking away with a really great feeling. I remember one of the Cherokee elders that came from Oklahoma to Georgia to shoot commented to Wes, and I heard through Wes that he said he felt like he was finally home. And you know, those were the kind of, you know, little gifts that you get in production where there's a spirit that's, you know, alive and well. And you know, it was a grand experiment that went well, that went all right. And at the end of the day, you look at the work, and I think we've done something that's different. I mean, if you think you've heard the Trail of Tears or Tecumseh or a story about Wounded Knee, you really haven't heard the whole story until you hear it, you know, this way, in this telling. And I honestly believe that.
Director Chris Ayer and executive producer Sharon Grimberg are here. We're talking about the upcoming PBS American Experience miniseries, We Shall Remain. It will debut on PBS stations, including KERA Channel 13, on April 13th. There is a screening of one part of that Trail of Tears tonight on the UTD campus at 7:30. We'll be back to your phone calls in a moment. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can get ahead in today's tough economy with hundreds of courses beginning this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
The harsh weather so slowed progress that supplies of dried corn and salt pork began to run short. When white settlers along the road recognized the Cherokees' need, a few offered help. Others took the opportunity to cash in on the woe, charging wildly inflated prices for grain. Cherokee men were soon too depleted to hunt wild game. A New Englander passing through western Kentucky noted the sad procession. 2,000 people, sick and feeble, many near death. One woman was carrying her youngest child, who was dying in her arms. Multitudes go on foot. Even aged females were traveling with heavy burdens attached to their back, on sometimes frozen ground, with no covering for the feet except what nature had given them. The Indians buried 14 or 15 at every stopping place.
One more segment from the PBS American Experience miniseries, We Shall Remain. There is a screening of that particular episode, Trail of Tears, tonight at the University of Texas at Dallas. You can watch the entire series on KERA Channel 13 television. It debuts April 13th, and director Chris Ayer and executive producer Sharon Grimberg are my guests. I want to talk a little bit more about that, because the way that particular segment, which is so heartrending, and I think it's something that oddly everyone can relate to, if they think about their families and their children and their elderly relatives trying to make a trip like this. There was, if possible for such heavy subject matter, sort of a light touch in terms of the shooting. We don't watch this happen sort of directly. We're left to imagine it. And I wonder if you can both talk about that decision.
Well, when we started the series, we wrestled with what it should look like, you know, what the whole thing should look like. We're a documentary series, and much of this history takes place before photography. So how are we going to realize it? And we talked a lot about that. And one of the things we realized was that that documentaries where there are reenactments, the reenactments often fail. They often feel very hokey. They often don't feel like they're part of the fabric of the film. And so we worked really hard to think about how we can create a look and feel for this series that would make them believable, make you buy into them. And one of the things we did across the series is that we played with the film look, so that when you're watching the film, you'll notice that the recreations aren't like fully saturated, as you'll see in many movies. They have a kind of desaturated look to them. And in the Trail of Tears segment, we kind of pull back. And maybe I should talk to Chris a little bit. Maybe you should talk to Chris a little bit more about this, because that was the philosophy of the whole series, is what do you show and what do you keep back? What do you reveal and what do you not reveal? When do you ask the viewer to engage their imaginations and help do some of the work? And this is one of the scenes where it is sort of minimalistic, and that the landscapes are very much a part of the scene. So you have a handful of people walking through incredible weather with snow and wind and blizzards.
All of which is real,
yeah, it's real. And then you have this aerial cinematography of the land that they're walking through. And at the very end, which breaks my heart, is the sounds of the voices as singing a hymn in Cherokee, which they sang along the trail. Actually, it's the sounds of the contemporary Cherokee youth choir. There's a choir in Oklahoma in the Cherokee Nations that sings in Cherokee, and it's one of the songs that they sing. And I think it's just so haunting when you hear those young voices singing in the echoing winds on the as they're walking through the mountains.
Did you know, Chris, as a narrative filmmaker by profession, did you know at the outset that this would work, or was there part of you that thought maybe we should sort of show this in a more concrete way?
I learned from everybody on this, and I think that anytime you go out, you know, you gain more in your repertoire. And so for me, it was the same thing, where we talked a lot about the style and the look of it. And like Sharon's saying, we found this way of describing the visual tragedy of the people on the Trail of Tears, in which we sketched it. And I think that allows the audience to participate in using their imagination and not having us draw everything in hard, defined lines. Otherwise, you know, there's this whole component where if you see the fingernails aren't dirty enough, or you see that the wardrobe looks like it hasn't been, wrinkled enough, you lose that suspension of belief in the visual image. So it was a matter of us showing just the sketches of what it must have been like. And we did that through tight camera work, through out of focus shots, through desaturation. But one of the greater things was our choosing of our DP, which mm-hmm. was Paul Goldsmith, wonderful DP.
And that's director of photography.
He's the director of photography. And he handheld a lot of the movie, and he would kind of rove the camera through the event. You know, I would direct the event and direct the actors, and he would rove the camera through the event. And, you know, it has a documentary feel to it, in that I come from a feature film background where I'm like, okay, let's set the camera here and have the actor deliver the lines. And then I realized, wait a minute, through Paul and Sharon and Mark Samuels, what we were going for was more about, you know, the mistakes. And like I said, the out of focus and the swinging the camera over just to pick up a line that somebody has, but not showing them do the whole line or the delivery of the whole line. And so it really became our repertoire of the way we shot. And like I said, I think it allowed the audience to participate with us and to let their imagination kind of fly as we told little bits and pieces.
There's a scene right after that of a murder, without giving too much away, and the murder happens off camera, and you see what you're seeing through the murder is the reactions of two female relatives to the murder.
It's amazingly effective.
It is. I don't know how many times I've seen it, and I can barely sit through it without crying because it's much more effective than actually seeing the brutality, as seeing and witnessing and understanding the pain of those two women as they watch this man be killed.
And even just the confusion, because you get that sense that they're not exactly sure what's happening as this starts to take place. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Gabriel in Dallas. Hi, Gabriel.
Yes, good afternoon. I want to praise and thank the director and the other people involved in the creation of this wonderful documentary. I think it's about time, and it's an overdue documentary to set the record straight, and not Hollywood, because Hollywood had always portrayed the Native Americans as savages and people that didn't care. And I am the uncle of four wonderful Native American Choctaw Indian children, and it breaks my heart when one of my nephews came up to me. Excuse me if I get a little bit emotional. My nephew came to me and he said, "Uncle," I said, "why are you drinking?" He said, "Well, the reason I'm drinking is because, you know, Uncle, I have a double hurdle in life." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you know, on the one side, I'm Native Indian Choctaw, and on the other one, I'm Mexican. And it's hard for me to really balance the both and to try to get ahead." So that, to me, is so heartbreaking, because this is how we are losing the generations, because we don't tell them this. We don't set the story straight.
Gabriel, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate you sharing that. You know, the point that he makes about Hollywood is an interesting one, because it seems to me there are actually two stereotypes. There's the Native American as savage, and then there's the Native American as impossibly wise, almost superhuman, humanly sort of placid. And I think from what I've seen, you get to the human side of all of these people, and they are fully human. They have flaws, and they have extraordinary strengths, and they're put in these situations where both things really come out in spades.
Yeah, I think that was very important for us, to make Native Americans real people, and they are real people. And, you know, they, some of them did incredible things, and some of them made mistakes, and they didn't always agree with each other, and even the wise had flaws, and we really tried to create three-dimensional characters. And then just to speak to Gabriel a little bit, I really hope that with this series that young Native Americans see their heroes, and that there are incredible heroes in the series, and that Chris has a story about this himself, about how young Native people haven't been given these stories. Tecumseh, John Ross, Major Ridge, Massasoit, who's a Wampanoag leader, were incredible people, and I hope that as part of this series, young Native Americans can feel proud of their past, and that we as Americans can look to these people as heroic figures, that they belong to all of us, that they were heroic leaders of the past.
That's right. I went to a Indian boarding school in Oregon to speak last year, and the thing that struck me when I asked the students there who their heroes were, nobody named a Native American hero. And that kind of stuck with me. And I thought about it. And when I was making this series, you know, I saw Tecumseh and Lila Wethica and Major Ridge and John Ross and all these amazingly complex people that were put in extraordinary circumstances of their time as leaders, as Native people that wanted to see their tribes, their brothers and sisters, their relatives all succeed. And they led them through some amazing parts of our U.S. history and their tribe's history. And to me, those are our heroes. And I hope that what this series does is it shows people, old and young, that we have Native American heroes. And we just have to look at the complexity of what they were faced with and understand that they were true leaders that helped build this country. And they belong to all of us, whether we're Cherokee or not, because we learn from our past. And, you know, we keep going forward in the spirit that is we're the, you know, greatest country in the world because we continue to learn and improve upon who we are as Americans. So, yeah.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the multimedia component of this, because it's not only a television documentary series. There's a lot of things going on online as well.
Yeah, I was actually going to say we have a website which is www.pbs.org/WeShallRemain. So for those of you who'd like to see pieces of the films pre-broadcast, there are clips up there. There's also a half-hour preview film that has clips from all of the films and some behind-the-scenes footage, Chris directing, and interviews with Wes Doody. But beyond that, we realized that this was a really big initiative, and that that the history was just a piece of it, and that we had an obligation to make sure that this material was available to people in many, many different ways. And so we established a very large outreach initiative pretty early on. We have 15 major coalition sites around the country where we've partnered with Native radio stations, universities, Native tribes and organizations, libraries, local television stations. And together we're producing a host of programming. Sometimes it's television, sometimes it's screenings of the films and discussions. Some of these sites actually have begun producing their own local documentaries. So the state of Utah, for example, the station in Salt Lake City has produced 5 local films on the tribes in Utah. In South Dakota, there's an oral history project. So there are a lot of regional activities going on. And beyond that, we also wanted to include as many young Native voices in this project as possible. So we trained Native Americans without media backgrounds to make their own short films. And we have about 20 of those online. Our last workshop was just completed in January, and there will be more films going online of those two. The part of the site is called Real Native, if you wanted to see those films.
Right, and there's a link to the entire website off our page so people can find it quickly. Sharon Grinberg is executive producer of the 5-week American Experience miniseries We Shall Remain. Chris Ayer is director of 3 of those parts. Both are in town for a screening of Trail of Tears tonight at UTD at 7:30. Chris, Sharon, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Thanks for having us.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions,